Hey, this is Jackie Miller. Thank you for joining me on Out of Crazy Town, your guide to divorcing a narcissist. I am super thrilled to have back Dr. Christine Cocciola, one of the leaders in education about coercive control. Today, we are talking about everything from how protective parents can reestablish bonds with their children and understand the coercive controlling happening with a coercive control parent. We talk about all of the amazing programs Dr. Cocciola has now. Everything from the Protective Parents Program to attorneys even being trained, as well as expert witnesses that you may need in your case. So listen in to this awesome episode with Dr. Christine Cocciola.
Hello, Dr. Cocciola. Thank you so much for coming back to Out of Crazy Town, your guide to divorcing a narcissist. I'm so glad to have you again.
Thank you so much for having me, Jackie.
I had to have you back on because I watch you very closely and I've watched the progression of all of the programs in education that you have from, your regular person on the street that's been going through this to your professional and attorney. And so it's amazing. And I want to talk through it. And I know a lot of people in this audience already know who you are, but just a real quick recap. Not only are you a leading expert on coercive control, you yourself, unfortunately, went through, the coercive control and abuse in your marriage and watched your children suffer it. And so unfortunately, you're forged by fire and have your expertise there as well. And you're the founding member of the International Coercive Control Conference, and you're known nationally and internationally. And you started out doing this work at the young age of 19.
Absolutely.
Last but not least, you have your own podcast, Perfect Prey Podcast. So if you guys don't already know that, go there. Amazing information. I wanted to start this out by asking you, Perfect Prey is such a perfect title. Tell me, though, why Perfect Prey and why you choose that verbiage?
Because I did a research study when I was doing my doctoral work at NYU, and I interviewed victims and survivors, and this theme kept coming up for me that, it's never a victim's fault, but these abusers know who to choose. And I, as a clinician, I use Jeffrey Young's work in schema theory. And schema theory talks specifically, and I just did another podcast recently talking a little bit more about schema theory, but it's this idea of subjugation, that the world in particular, that women and children and vulnerable people, people of color and everything, the world that we grow up in is a world where, we follow the rules. Maybe it's religion or maybe it's race. There's so many issues. Maybe you're a child and you're vulnerable and you follow the rules. You learn to follow the rules. And in that, society's set up in a way where, in general, women and children are going to be more vulnerable. They're going to be the perfect prey. And that is really because we are often taught to acquiesce, to do what somebody tells us to do. And that is never our fault, to be really clear. It is never our fault. If you or I met a wonderful human being, frankly, I'm going to say it, a person with super traits, somebody who's empathic, who's giving, who works really hard at something, is tenacious, conscientious, Sandra Brown, who does the Institute in Relational Harm, she did a research study with a Purdue professor. It was not published, but what we know is that in that Big Five personality traits, victims and survivors tend to be highly agreeable and conscientious. And you know what? That makes you kind of an effing amazing human.
Yeah.
If you meet someone like that, boom, you've got the perfect relationship. But who do you think abusers are going to look for?
Yeah.
They're going to look for a person who's agreeable, who doesn't really, and it's not about poor boundaries. It can be, and it's not about codependency. I draw the line there. It's not about codependency. And it can be, and it's not about self-worth. It's about the fact that you may be willing to just work a little harder at things. You see the glasses half full all the time, and you tend to be really loyal. These are the people who get accused of doing something really bad.
Yeah.
And every single time the perpetrator's accusation is their confession.
Yeah.
You know it. Because you're the last person who would cheat on your partner. Or maybe you cheated and you feel really sorry and you make up for it. But you're not the person who has a pattern of behavior to dominate another person.
And, we're going to talk about this later, but that leads into DARVO, right? And why I'm sure it's so effective in this personality. And I love super traits. I haven't heard this. So thank you for that. I'm going straight when we're done here to look up some more super trait information. But oh my gosh, you said so many things, because I'm sure if this audience is reflecting on themselves, I did have boundary work to do. But you know what? I was a confident person and I did have all those super traits, but there were a lot of things that don't fit with the profile sometimes that we put on people who get targeted by coercive controllers.
Absolutely. And I would say that we all have boundary issues. If you grow up subjugated, you grow up in a world where you do learn that maybe following other people's direction is important. And you want, you know, you do grow up being a little bit of a people pleaser. So boundary work is certainly important. There's no doubt about it. But what I'm saying is it wasn't your lack of boundaries that made you get into an abusive relationship. It was a perpetrator's choosing you as their perfect prey.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for elaborating on that. And as I mentioned earlier, you've done so much work. You've been so busy creating all these amazing programs and education. When I look at your stuff, the old sort of adage of like, if you give someone a fish, right, you feed them for a day. If you teach them to fish, you feed them for a lifetime. And I think of that when I look at your stuff, because you can certainly contact you and get help one-on-one, but you have programs for everyone. And so in that context, I want to talk about coercive control, because the one program you've had out for a while is the protective parenting program. And I know that I just basically want you to kind of walk people through exactly what they would learn in that program. And I know you can kind of go on and see the modules and stuff on your website, but what is it that you are teaching people there?
I'm teaching moms, protective parents. I have some men who take it self-study. I do the live program with moms only, but I am teaching parents to parent children who have been coercively controlled. And so this is beyond typical trauma. This is children who don't even know they're being abused. Oftentimes the protective parent doesn't know they're being abused. They don't understand the coercion that is going on behind the scenes. And then, so we have to parent these children differently, because it's beyond gentle parenting, which is the new like guru word that we're using. It's beyond that, because you have to actually understand that all of your children's behaviors are a result of what's going on when they're spending time with the abuser, that they are unfortunately suffering unacknowledged child abuse. Nobody is seeing it. And then when our children behave in a way that we really don't like, our reaction oftentimes, typical parenting, is, how dare you? Or why would you say that to mom? That's mean. Don't be mean. And what you need to understand and what your listeners need to understand is that the coercive controller is doing everything he can to compromise their egos, just like he did with you, just like he did with you. So they don't have agency. They don't have autonomy. So they feel really off balance. And he's doing that all of the time by saying things like, oh, too bad you're not better at that sport. Or I wish you played this sport. Or I wish that you got an A on that test. Or saying, you don't have to worry about that test. Don't worry about it. It's okay if you got an F. Like, not parenting. Right? And so they're getting, and these abusers are varied. There's no, like, you can't pinpoint exactly what they'll do. But oftentimes as children age, they give the children carte blanche, because that's a way to really lure the children back in. And here's the problem, is that if that's going on with them all of the time, and then they're hearing that your mother doesn't really love you, or your mother's crazy, you know that she's, you know, if they're hearing all of that, and then they come home to you, and then you are saying, how dare you talk to me that way? Or you might yell, right? Get upset, as we might, right? I mean, child calls you a bitch. You're like, what? Okay. But then if you react in the way that you might typically with a typical child, two healthy co-parents, if you react that way, you actually are adding fuel to the fire he is trying to burn with them. He is trying to burn within them compromise so they have no agency. And if you do that, they're going to be more readily aligned with him.
Yeah.
If you handle it in a way recognizing it's not even them, they're on a recording. And maybe some of them, after years of indoctrination, truly believe it. Well, guess what? You're yelling at them is not going to change their mind. You're getting upset is not going to change the mind. The only thing that's going to change their mind is if you show up in a way that is regulated, that you show up in a way that they know you love them no matter what they do, because they know that abuser doesn't love them no matter what they do.
Yeah.
And so the protective parenting program is set up in a way where we talk about coercive control, we talk about trauma, we talk about grief and loss. There's so much grief and loss in all this. And then what are the strategies you can do? What can you look for? And how can you respond in a way that creates we need to deepen their attachment with us or reignite it if it's been a little bit lost. We need to like fill in the concrete fractures he's creating all over the place because he's doing it all the time. And I'm saying he, I know there are women who do this to their children.
Sure, sure. And, you know, I want to just give you a hypothetical of like the sort of a meld of, situations I've seen. And I send clients to you when I'm like, oh boy, I'm in over my head because, you know, it's like, you got to call Dr. Cochiola. Hypothetical. Child, I don't know, maybe 12, 13, boy, is a boy, goes to mom's, is obviously experiencing coercive control with dad in the home and saying all the things you just said about mom. Now, when he gets with mom, refuses to eat her dinner, won't go to his favorite movie with her, won't go to his favorite sporting event with her, won't, you know, she's pulling out all the stops. And one of the conversations I have, and I want you to tell me if I'm on the right track here and get your thoughts on it. I often say, you know, they're in trouble if they have fun with you. It's my perception. They're going to be in so much trouble if they have fun with you that it's actually not worth eating your dinner or going to their favorite concert because what they're going to endure when they return back to the coercive controller is going to be pretty horrible. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, absolutely. It's going over enemy lines. It's going over enemy lines. So there's that. And then the other thing is that if a protective parent is trying so hard to get the child, it's like a begging. Well, then she's lost her personal power. And frankly, the children will never come back to you if you don't have personal power. They need to know that when you say, hey, I made your favorite dinner I made you your favorite dinner tonight. And they say, I don't care. I don't want to eat that. And you say, okay. And you go ahead and eat it and you turn the music on and you relax and you enjoy yourself. And what they know is that they haven't broken you. Because when they think they've broken you, when they think you're begging, they have been able to exert power and control over you, which is exactly what he's been training them to do. So that, of course, only creates more shame in them, by the way.
Yeah.
Think about how much shame they're carrying when they've been able to successfully do that.
Right. And so a couple of things there, right? So if you're like, you will sit here and eat your dinner and you're not getting up from the table, you know, so then you're feeding into mom is a dictator and crazy and whatever, right? And then you say something else on your website, which is feeding into what you just stated. If they perceive weakness, they don't feel safe. And what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So remember that in that relationship, right? Who was the weak one and who was the most powerful one? Right. And now they're going between the powerful person's home and the quote unquote weak person's home. Right. How could they ever switch teams? How do you leave the enemy when you don't know if the other person can actually protect you? You don't know that they're going to be able to stand up. And, you know, I say this like with, I want to be cautious because deep, deep, deep down inside, they know you're the safe parent. Our goal is to show them that. They know that they're attached to their protective parent like no other attachment. No one could ever take that away, ever. Deep down inside, they know it. The goal is that they actually believe it. Yeah. That's the goal.
And you also state something which is so true, that this is a marathon and you have to employ these tactics, but you've got to be patient.
Mm-hmm. And two steps forward, one step back all the time. And it can flip on a dime. If you have a 12-year-old, who really loves mommy, protective parent will say, and you have a 15-year-old who hates you, you know, that could all flip in a moment. Now, ideally, obviously, the 15-year-old comes back to you. But my point is that 12-year-old, I have a mom just like last week, I was talking to her, and understand her 12-year-old all of a sudden is using the same exact tactics that the 15-year-old is using. It can flip on a dime. You have to work really hard. This is your life's work. You are your children's saving grace. This is your life's work. And frankly, if you are able to navigate this in a way that we need everyone to navigate it, that we need the systems to acknowledge as a problem, right? Then we can prevent the intergenerational trauma. We can.
That's amazing. And that is very motivating. And so kind of just moving in then to some of your other programs, and I don't want to lose any of the audience here, just because we're going to go into the Coach and Ally program doesn't mean you have to be a coach, because I want you to understand what Dr. Cochiola is teaching everyone out there. And one of the things you talk about in the Coach and Ally program, and there are a lot of coaches that listen to this podcast as well. So you guys, there is a program that Dr. Cochiola can help you coach better to this topic. You say that you help understand and interpret dramatic reactions of children. I know we've kind of already touched on that, but can you elaborate any more on the dramatic reactions of children?
Yeah. So, I mean, children are going to come home so dysregulated. They're going to be in fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. And so how do we help our clients understand as a coach, right? How do we help our clients understand what those reactions are? So this is like a trauma-informed training, right? As a clinician, I'm trauma-trained. So, but that's the point, is that it's also coercive control training, right? So this is not a child who suffered a significant trauma because of a death of a parent. This is a child who's suffering unacknowledged child abuse. And so how do we help our clients really understand the different trauma responses, how this trauma impacts the brain, the stress on the brain? There's so much stress on these children's brains. The idea that we expect children to behave a certain way, and when they are traumatized, they're going to be more often in reptilian mode. They are going to be reactive, and they're not going to at that moment figure out what they did wrong. And so how do we get them to be able to verbalize and explain how they're feeling? And this is really like coaches need to understand, my opinion, and clinicians. I have a clinician training that's specific for therapists. But in the coach training, I'm actually going to offer self-study going forward too. But what I would say is that understanding from it's like soup to nuts. What is coercive control? How is it inflicted by the court system? What are the variations that occur in the court system? How is it inflicted on the protective parent, but also on the children? And what are the ways that we can support these victims and survivors? And by the way, how do you know the difference between the perpetrator and the victim? Like, these are like some of the things that I talk about. Because I believe if you're doing divorce coaching, then most of your cases are abuse.
Yes.
Most of them are going to be abuse. And that's
absolutely
control. So that's, I'm doing a TEDx in a few weeks.
I know.
And what I'm talking about is coercive control is beyond the violent incident amount. We need to understand it's the underpinning of it all. It's all about someone exerting power and control of you, whether they hit you, whether they verbally assault you, whether they diminish you or mock you. It doesn't matter.
It is all about control. And you and I talked about that the last time that you were on, because it's obviously in divorce coaching, we deal a lot with the post-separation abuse, because that's right. It's post-separation and now they're abusing, and it's, so it's using all of those abuse tools to now, you know, continue to exert the control, and they need the control. And, you know, it's something I talk a lot about moving forward into the transition and healing, but basically I sort of use the analogy almost as a remote control. So they exerted the abuse during the relationship, right? And they basically sort of installed all these trauma triggers, neural pathways, so that when you're now away from them and out of their control, they just hit the button, text message. We're going to get to Darvo in a second. You know, Darvo, email, use my attorney to abuse you. And they just hit the buttons and then get satisfaction out of knowing that you're reacting and they have still have some control over you. Yeah. So actually, would you talk a little bit more, because I have that as a question here, about the difference between the perpetrator and the victim? Because I think this is fascinating. If you could just elaborate a little more on that.
Sure. So victims will oftentimes present as emotionally raw, like overwhelmed, right?
Yeah.
However, victims often apologize over and over again for slight indiscretions. That's a really key thing, right? Victims don't want people to think that they're have malicious intent, right? Perpetrators are going to show up in a way where they are in a lot of control, right? Where they feel, where they're able to walk into a room and just be calm, right? And perpetrators also will not apologize or take responsibility for things that they've done wrong. The apology is always inauthentic, versus a victim will be over-apologizing, trying to make sure that she's convinced. And that's the thing. When people show up in our lives and they're over-explaining, they feel like they need to tell someone several times why they parked in the handicapped parking today. They feel like they need to do that. That's a trauma response. And we have to ask, where did that come from? Did it come from the family of origin, where someone never really validated that they were heard or that no one believed them, right? Or did it come from the relational dynamics? And that would be the key for me. How do you know the difference between the abuser and the victim? What's the foundation of the parental subsystem? What's the foundation? Who's the person who's had the most money? Who's controlled most of the circumstances? Who's the person who maybe had an affair, supposedly, one, right? Who's the, like, ask yourself, like, line up all of these, like, incidences, experiences, and then usually it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Usually it's pretty clear.
And then just going back to Darvo, because one thing that I experienced it, I know you experienced it, and watching clients, it just breaks my heart, because to me, you could also call it the hook. To me, one of the primary ways they use to just continue to get the victim hooked back in to the drama. And so just in case someone doesn't know, it's deny whatever they've done. Then they attack you, right? Mm-hmm. And so therefore, then they get to reverse that they're the victim and you're the offender. And so there you go. You have Darvo. What are your thoughts on Darvo? Because I know it's something that you address a lot in your program as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's the perfect way to this is what these abusers do with their children too, because they act like they're the victim. Like, I never wanted to leave mom, or I can't believe mom did this to our family. She destroyed us, whatever it is, right? And so it's the perfect way to prey upon someone's vulnerabilities, because victims often feel very badly about leaving the abuser. Victims often feel like maybe they should have tried harder. And so it works out perfectly. And as a matter of fact, I think, parental alienation is a significant Darvo tactic, right? I'm going to just accuse, you of alienating me, and poor me, right? And the reality is that I've been an abuser, or I've never really, even if I didn't actually overtly abuse the children, I certainly covertly abused them for years. I'm going to act like they matter to me. They've never mattered to me. And I think your listeners need to hear that. And people like say to me, wow, that's harsh. These abusers are evil. There is evil in the world, and they do not really care and love your children. Do not tell them. Do not tell your children your father loves you or your mother loves you. Do not lie to them. Do not gaslight them. And, I had a mom this week. I was talking to her. I do this sometimes. I'll consult with custody evaluators and just explain, without knowing the case, just explain coercive control. And this woman, this custody evaluator, had lots of experience with domestic violence, she called it, domestic abuse, and told me that the father had tons of video of the mother behaving, abusive, actually hitting him and pushing him. And I said, okay, so A, what happened before the videos?
Thank you.
Yep, because that's not reactive abuse, by the way. It's called self-defense. If you trap me over and over and over again, I am going to defend myself, and I might push you back, and I might hit you, right? Okay, so that's number one. But number two is, this mom was back to, so he had taken complete custody, and she was now back to supervised visits with her child, and her child was doing so much better. And everyone, the court evaluator knew, everybody knew that this child was thriving in his mother's, in the care with his mother during this time. And I said, well, then tell me, why does the father not want her to have more time?
Ding, ding, ding.
It's the answer. Who's the abuser? Oh, excuse me. I know who the abuser is. I don't even know this case, but I know who the abuser is, because no healthy parent would prevent their children from spending time with the other parent. No healthy parent.
And especially when it's clear that they're thriving when they finally get time back with that parent.
Exactly. Yes.
I'm so glad that you said, first of all, I'm so relieved a custody evaluator's talking. We need those people so bad to come and see you. But the second part of that is, what happened? These video things drive me mad. I had a case where he had planted, recording or cameras in the house, and same thing, would just tease her, antagonize till she'd lose it. And then, it just shows the clips of her finally saying, get away from me, and screaming at him. And it just, it broke my heart, and he got away with it for a long time. So I'm so glad to hear that. And so, speaking of professionals coming to see you, it's so awesome that you have attorney and other professional training. What else are you teaching attorneys in your attorney training?
So I have a 2.5-hour master class that attorneys can purchase for their law office. It's not, it's not just for one person. You can purchase it for your whole law office, and it's soup to nuts coercive control, but it's 2.5 hours instead of 10 hours. How's that? The coach training is 10 hours.
Yeah.
The clinician training is 14 hours. So yeah, there, I think if I could, the coach training to me is extremely comprehensive, but it doesn't have the clinical aspect as much. So the coach training is ideal. And I also have a Protective Parents and Allies, just a short webinar on my website that is just to teach people a little bit about, if you have loved ones who don't understand what you're experiencing, send them that webinar, because that webinar is just a little primer about what you've experienced. And then the Where Is Your Line webinar is to teach anyone at any age that love is not control. I would love for that webinar. That's the webinar I wish would take off, because we need young people to understand the red and the green flags in a relationship. You know, what's a healthy relationship?
Yeah, we need to be showing that in every high school, or even when they're doing, like, you know, sex ed or whatever it is. I think that's fifth grade. I don't know how young you would advise it, but I know it's definitely for adolescents. And oh my God, that would be amazing. Thank you. So anybody who would like to purchase that, even for their own child, that would be amazing. So thank you for saying that, because you guys, if you go to her website, coercivecontrolconsulting.com, you will see all of these programs. And there are 1 hour webinars that, you know, you can do versus the longer programs. And so I know with protective parenting program, you can get just do online self-study, right? And then you're doing another live one when? In the fall?
My next live is in September.
Okay.
So I'm in the process of one right now. And I want to mention, Jackie, just so your listeners know, I have free content. So there's a free Reignited Attachment webinar on my website that talks about how we can reignite our children's attachments to us. And also there's a 20-minute version of Where Is Your Line? It's the shorter version. So yeah.
I love it. This is all amazing information. And is there anything else really quick? Because I know if you would touch on, you've hired a couple of more professionals that are also doing coaching, I think, and doing expert witness training. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So Dr. Lisa Fontes, who is like the goat of expert witnesses in our country, she agreed to do an expert witness training for people who had either been trained by me in the clinician training, or people who at least took the master class so that they have a primer, like a 2.5 hour primer on coercive control. And I think she trained about 8 people. Last time she wanted the first cohort to be very small. And I think she has several people in that cohort who are ready to be expert witnesses. So anybody who's looking for an expert witness probably wants to reach out to Dr. Fontes. And then the goal is that she'll have another training, because I think this is, you know, what I said to her is we need to infiltrate the system. The system isn't working the way it is. And we can't keep screaming from the rooftops telling custody evaluators to wake up and all these people. We have to actually get people who know this shit and get in there. And so that's kind of my goal. I don't do expert witnessing unless it's to prevent a child from going to a reunification camp. But I don't do it because I also teach full time. So, you know, at a college. So it's, it's just not in my, I can't.
Sure. Well, the bottom line is you've provided it as a resource. You facilitated it, which is amazing. So, and I've had so many people ask me about expert witnesses, especially in California. We talked about this before, but anyway, we've got the law in place, but it's, you know, getting a slow start. So anyway, you guys, yes, go to Dr. Christine Cocciola's website, coercivecontrolconsulting.com. So many resources. And later we can talk about this. We need to figure out how to push out this program to the attorneys as well. But we can talk about that another time.
I need someone to help me, like, just, you know, because it's for attorneys in their office. It's really inexpensive. And I just wish that more attorneys knew about it and maybe were interested. What I did want to mention, which I think is important, I think you'll be excited to hear that myself and Amy Polacco are coming out with a book about family court trauma. And we're really excited. It'll be out, I think, by midsummer pre-sale. But it's the stories of protective mothers and their children and the atrocities they've experienced. So we're really hopeful that, you know, your listeners will, you know, our goal is that this book does not just get into the hands of the people who understand it. Our goal is that this book gets out everywhere. And so we need everyone's help to do that, because we're super excited about the possibility that this could happen.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So you have to come back on and we're going to talk about your book and we're going to get the pre-sale going. That is amazing. I have the chills actually. I'm so excited. That was fantastic. I know you have to go. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Cocciola. I just can't thank you enough for all the good work that you're doing.
And thank you for all that you're doing. It takes a village. We are working hard.
It sure does. Okay. So excited for the book, and we will have you back on again then a little closer to that release date.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great afternoon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.